Welcome to another episode of Parenting Not What You Thought podcast, where we delve into the depths of parenting in ways that you might never have thought of before. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Hello, Yaakov Kibble. Thank you so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure. It's nice to be able to spend some time talking together, finally.
Okay. Yes, we've worked together in the past. Let me ask you, so for the listener's benefit, what is your level of licensure? LCSW, MSW, I know there's a lot of different ones. What are you?
Okay, so I received my master's in social work, MSW, in 2009. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, I became licensed. So I'm currently an LCSW.
Oh, wow.
Licensed clinical social worker.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's amazing. And who do you primarily work with? Kids, adults, parents? Who do you primarily work with?
So I do see a broad range of ages, although primarily I would say the younger boys, some 6 to 7, but 8 through 14 about is generally the main age that I work with.
You work for yourself, you work in a company, you do both, right?
So for many years I've been working with the here in Lakewood LCSC, mm-hmm. Which is a clinic. And recently, about a year ago, I joined Dr. Yossi Schaefer, who has a group practice here in Lakewood.
Oh, very nice. Tower. Oh, very nice. Beautiful. Okay, so let me ask you like this. You work with children a lot, and I'm sure something that comes up frequently is going to sleep. I mean, bedtime is something that everybody struggles with.
That's for sure.
There are many different aspects to it. Now, I know that there was a video that was from Empower, I think, that they put out a video from you talking about, you know, a tip or a technique about how to get children to face their fears. So let me ask you, let's start like from even before bedtime. Scenario that will play itself out very often in many homes is, okay, you know, one of the parents says, whoever the child is, Malky, it's time to go to sleep. And Malky says, I don't want to. Now, we all know that part of that it can be very often just a behavioral thing. They're not really interested in, okay, so we deal with that as a regular parenting piece. You know, it's more fun to stay up. There's the FOMO, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of times there are other things that come into consideration. I know of children that were scared of going upstairs by themselves. They want someone else to be with them. They're scared of that. Sometimes you'll have children that are actually scared of not being able to fall asleep. They know other nights they've went to bed, they've lied in bed, and they haven't been able to fall asleep. It was very, very uncomfortable to lay in bed for so long, not doing anything, and they're nervous. They don't want to go up. What are some of the common fears that you've come across that children don't even want to go to sleep?
Okay.
Are there any? Have you seen any?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned FOMO, and that it's funny. That's not so much a fear all in the sense of the anxiety part of, you know, it's a fear of missing out, but it's a different type of fear, of course. I do see it a lot of times, especially when there are older siblings in the house, and the house is kind of rocking and rolling during bedtime. That is a tremendous challenge. But it sounds like you're wanting to zero in more of the anxious.
Well, let's talk about the FOMO. That's something you see a lot. That's something that will matter to a lot of parents. Let's talk about the FOMO for a minute. How do you look at it when a child is scared of missing out? He has a fear of missing out. He has FOMO. Would you call that like he's just trying to avoid something that he needs to do, and therefore will, let's say, I'm sorry, but this is what you need to do, and that's it? Or should we be dealing with the fear, like there's something that's actually bothering him inside, and it's not just an avoidance technique, but there's something that's actually bothering him, and therefore that's something that should be dealt with also?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, each child is different and every household is different. What I had experienced was that there are many houses where there truly is a lot of action going on. And I think it's totally legitimate that the child does not want to go to sleep. Now, why should he? There's so much going on. Mm-hmm. And that's a big challenge. I think to put all of the responsibility on the child in that case, to have to just shut down everything that's going on, I don't think that's so fair. And I do think it's parents have to try as much as possible to try to get the household on a more of a subdued level when it comes to bedtime. I know every house is different, but I do think that's very important.
Okay, so that's a very big point that you're saying over here. So basically, part of the parent responsibility would be to have the other children also helping out in a way with this child's bedtime by calming down the level of noise, calming down the activity, etc. So let's break that down a drop, because you'll have a house where you're trying to put a four-year-old to bed, let's say, and the 7-8-year-old is still running around. That would be one level. And then you'll have a different house where you're trying to put the 7-year-old to bed, and you'll have three teenagers that are really, you know, racking up a storm. And I think that would be a very different level. So let's start with the first one, where you're trying to put a younger child to bed, and there's a child a few years older than them that's still up, and they're playing around, and they're going, what would you consider the best practice for the parent to do, both for the child that's going to sleep and for the child that's not going to sleep, in order to make this as effective as possible?
Okay, so I mean, just anticipating the 7-year-old's bedtime, you're probably going to want him to be winding down anyway, to some extent, so he doesn't have to go to sleep yet. He's older, or she's older, but the activities don't necessarily have to be as loud and noisy and distracting. At my own home, when we have those types of ages, we found the best, my wife gets the credit for this, of course, but using a sound machine, let's say for a 4-year-old, I don't know that a 4-year-old necessarily is going to have that same level of FOMO as the 7-year-old with his teenage or her teenage siblings, but using some way to keep the sound away from the 4-year-old, it could be helpful. That's for the first scenario.
Okay, and then that's a great point. In the second scenario, where you have, there's a lot of real action going on, because teenagers, bedtime is not even on the horizon yet. The night's young, they're just getting started.
That's right.
So what would you do in such a case?
Right, so, I mean, of course, the actual home will play a large role in this. If you have different floors where the teenager can talk on the phone, where it's not distracting the younger child, that obviously would be best. And there has to be some sort of, contracting with the other siblings, and to be considerate to the younger ones. It's fun to be out till 11 o'clock, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, but there has to be some sort of cohesion, because no one wants a bratty 7-year-old the next morning.
That's a very good point. When you remind the kids of how their morning looks when they're just, racing out to the bus because they just got up, they didn't go to sleep that long ago.
Right.
And if their 7-year-old little sister is really going to get on their nerves, they're going to, it might be in their own best interest to just, help that kid get to sleep on time. It's a great point.
That's for sure.
Speaking of different floors, though, something that I had mentioned earlier was that you have a lot of children, I would say in the 5, 6, 7-year-old range, that are actually scared of going upstairs by themselves, of, being on the floor by themselves. And even if you have that, the parents will put them to bed, usually at that age. But not, they're still scared, because then mommy's going to go downstairs, or and I'm going to be up by myself, and the younger kid, the 3-year-old that's already sleeping, doesn't count. How do we deal with a phobia like that?
Right. I think I'm assuming the parents are the ones that are watching this, not the kids. So
this is,
we're going to address them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as a parent myself, it can be very difficult, even with all the knowledge that you have, working in this field, when a child doesn't want to go upstairs because they're afraid of some sort of monster that's upstairs. And sometimes the monster only comes out that night of the week. It's not even every single night. That night, the monster doesn't come. So our first tendency is really to dismiss it. What are you, you're being so unreasonable. There's no monsters, and just go already. And that's how probably many of us, myself included, have acted. But the truth is about any anxiety is that in order to go anywhere with your child, there really has to be that empathy and validation that they really are scared. They're not, in most cases, they're really not making it up. So of course you have to know your child, but in many cases they really are scared to be alone, and that has to be dealt with on a level that the child can appreciate, and not just dictatorially that you go to bed and just keep quiet. So that's just going to exacerbate the fear.
Okay, so let's try to make this as realistic as possible. Let's say I have a 7-8-year-old child, and the child says, one time I remember 2 years ago there was a break-in in the neighborhood at night. I'm scared to be upstairs by myself. Even if you tell me everything logically, the robbers came in through an unlocked door in the main floor, not upstairs. They're not climbing ladders. There's videos, there's lights, whatever. You go through everything logically, it doesn't help. I'm scared. What practical tools can the parents employ to actually help the child overcome that fear in the moment. I mean, obviously, you know, if you go to someone, you do a long-term plan, like with the therapist or whatever, that's one thing. But we're talking for parents in the moment, you know, this is a regular thing, not necessarily something that needs an outside intervention even. What practical tools can the parents employ in the moment to help their child actually get into a cozy, calm, comfortable sleep when they're experiencing that fear?
Right, right. I know this is very common. And the first thing I would say is, even if you're not utilizing a therapist, you need to start before bedtime, because once it's bedtime and the fear sensors start rising, then that's not really the time to have a logical discussion with your child about how discussing the statistics and the percentages and how unlikely, and the cops are going back and forth watching for any robbers. They're too afraid to hear logic at that point. Anytime a person's emotions are in a heightened sense, then logic is just out the window. So you're not going to accomplish anything. So if you have a child that has this as a consistent problem, you'll want to have that conversation not right before bedtime, in order to be able to discuss the fears on a logical plane. That's one important part to know. But what you're asking about, what do you do in the moment? So what we do with anxiety is try to make a hierarchy of different levels of exposing yourself to the fear. So that's kind of what you're going to want to try to do. So what I mean to say is, if the child doesn't want to go to upstairs by himself or herself, then it's not going to work to just say, you know, get over your fears. You're going to have to go with them upstairs and spend some time until their body can actually calm down, because the nervous system is really on high alert and they need your help to relax themselves. So initially you're going to have to stay with them for a certain amount of time. As things progress, you'll want to be able to minimize that time. And it is very important that the child should be in their own bedroom, not in your bedroom. That's not good for anyone. And you start with a reasonable amount of time. Sitting with them for 3 hours is not healthy, but a certain amount of time until they can calm down and relax. And then you'll have discussions with them. And, you know, tonight when we go to bed, I'm going to stay with you for 25 minutes or whatever it is, whatever is necessary. And there are other tools you could use as well, besides just staying with the child. But that's definitely step one, is just to help them relax and legitimize their fear that they are feeling something, and you're going to help them through it.
Okay. So basically, I think the main thing that I'm taking out of what you're saying is, in general, with all anxieties, once the person is in that emotional state, logic will not talk to them because their emotions right now, they're feeling their emotions in their body. And then you're going to have to actually talk to the emotion, which is not really with words, but much more with your physical presence, with, you know, actually doing what they need to at that moment to allay that fear. But talking to them logically will work before the emotions come into play, and that logic that predated the emotion will help for the regular trigger of the emotion. Did I get that right?
It will help. I mean, it may not solve everything, but it'll definitely, it's an important step. Never mind.
Right. Amazing. Okay, amazing. Now, you mentioned that they're not good for the child to sleep in the parents' bedroom. Why would that be?
Why would that be?
Yeah, well, I mean, what's the problem with that, right? So, you know, it makes the kid feel good. It, you know, you're tuning into his emotions, and now he gets that comfort of being in his parents' room. What is the downside to sleeping in the parents' bedroom?
Right. I mean, so from the child's point of view, the downside is that you're never giving them that ability to regulate themselves, because what an important part of overcoming any anxiety is that if you don't face even a small dose of anxiety, a fear, then you're not prepared for it. You won't know how to handle it. So you're not doing your child a service by keeping them in a situation that where no anxiety can even come up. That's from the child's point of view. From the parents,
that's an amazing point.
You know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For parents, you're not going to be, you're going to end up resenting that your child's intruding on your bedroom, in most cases. Resenting the fact that your child is intruding. Yeah, right. It'll affect you going to sleep on time, and it'll affect just anything, just getting yourself ready for bed. You have to tiptoe around the child because the child is sleeping. So, and so in the end, all the support that you're trying to give to your child is going to go down the tubes when you're so frustrated that they can't sleep in their own bedroom.
Amazing points. So that's amazing. So you're saying that it's actually good for the child to experience some anxiety in order that he should be able to build up his ability to deal with anxiety. Because at the end of the day, even if we bubble wrap our children when they're kids, we're not going to be able to do that for them when they're adults. So therefore, it's actually detrimental for them to do it for them when they're children, because they're never going to learn how to be adults. Amazing.
Absolutely, right.
And the point that you said also about the parents getting frustrated actually send what you're trying to accomplish with your child down the tubes is a great point. A parent can't just push away what they need themselves. They have to realize in order for them to be good parents, they have to be functioning parents. That's another great point. Let me ask you like this. So you did all this. You spoke to the child before. You gave them that downtime before bedtime. You had them relax. Beautiful. The child went to sleep like a dream. The problem is it comes 2 hours later and he's screaming and crying and can't go back to sleep. He had a bad dream. He didn't have a bad dream. It's something wrong. What would cause the child to wake up in the middle of the night? And it's very often harder to get them to go back to sleep when they're in the middle of the night, because they're even less logical than they were before they went to sleep with all their fears. So what can be done about it then?
Right. So that's a great point and great question. From my experience, I've seen two different types of, let's call it, waking up from nightmares. The everyday run-of-the-mill variety nightmare, which is very common. I just saw a statistic, 50 of children will experience nightmares, so it's not unusual. I'm just going to show you, this is a great book that I like to use a lot. It's called Freeing Your Child from Anxiety. It's written by psychologist Tamar Chansky. So she talks about this, and her recommendation is also try to keep the child in the room if possible. You know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, that could be hard for you to do that. But obviously we all get a few passes as parents, so we don't have to do everything by the book all the time. That's okay. But eventually, if it's happening a lot, you want to do the same reassuring presence. If you can sit with them for 10 minutes till they calm down, you know, that's okay also. Of course, you know, other types of calming skills could be useful as well. I'm not sure about in the middle of the night as much. The only thing I would caution about, what I have seen on some occasions, is that if this is happening repeatedly where they're waking up, there may be something else than just your run-of-the-mill nightmare that's causing them to wake up. There may be some sort of panic disorder. Something may have happened to them that is making them, it's almost like a miniature PTSD reaction, where something traumatic happened to them and that's preventing their sleep. That will require more intervention, whether the parent can do it themselves or whether they'll need a therapist. That needs to be evaluated, but that's in those more rare cases.
Mm-hmm. And the regular nightmares is not really a way to prevent that, you're saying. Like the whole calmness before going to sleep, will that help that, or that's completely irrelevant?
So it's sometimes we can't help it. I will say that it's very interesting, because I had someone that came to me as a client, and they told me how after they watched a certain movie, they were having nightmares. And then not so long afterwards, this movie had just come out. Someone else came to me and said they were having nightmares. And I said, did you watch this movie? And they said, yes, I did.
Oh, wow.
So it was very funny, because what happens to us during the day will affect, you know, in the subconscious mind, that will affect us. So we may not be able to prevent all nightmares, but watching scary things, especially close to bedtime. But even if you have a child who is prone to anxiety, then even though for us watching something scary gives us a thrill, but for those people who tend to the anxiety, then it's not such a great idea, because it will come out in their sleep. Oh. So that's one thing I would definitely suggest. To try to avoid that, especially near bedtime.
Okay, so that actually brings me to another point that comes back to before bedtime. Let's get back there. Because you're saying that anything that happened to the child during the day will affect them at night. May affect them at night. I know we see this a lot. I'm sure you do also. Whenever the child gets into bed, all of a sudden there's a lot of problems. Their teacher hates them, their friends, whatever. They have 17 different boo-boos all over their body that were killing them the whole day. You just didn't realize it when they were running around and playing. and et cetera. That's one side. The other side is that's really when they like to talk to their parents. They want to share everything that happened. Is when you're like, just go to sleep already. The day's been long enough. Bedtime's running late already. And please just go to sleep. And now is when they want to talk about everything. Well, the good parts also. Everything that happened in their day.
Right. Right.
So like you were saying, that everything that happened during the day affects them. And apparently it comes out much more during the night or even before the night when they're getting into bed. So two things. Number one is, why does everything come out specifically then? And number two is, at the end of the day, should you allow your child to talk about everything then? Should you just, or is there a way to help that calmness or that talking or that getting it out of their system in a way that it shouldn't affect the bedtime as much?
Right, right. That's those are great points, and I'm sure many people are experiencing that. It sounds like there are three different descriptions from what you were saying. There are the people who have legitimate anxiety, and they're using the questions to try to adjust. They need to calm their nerves down, and they keep asking questions until they can relax themselves. And there are those people who are just using as a diversion tactic. This is a way to stay up. Thirdly, there are those kids that this is the first time they had a chance to actually speak with mommy or daddy the whole day. And this is their first alone time. So in that case, the easiest solution is probably to try to make some time earlier than bedtime. Or, it's depending on your schedule. If you have the time, that's your time to talk with them, great. But if it ends up becoming a 45-minute conversation, then you want to try your best over supper time, whatever it is, to have those conversations so that at bedtime there's less to talk about it. When it's a diversion tactic, hopefully you can read your child's cues well enough to know that. And then you can then just validate, say, sweetie, there's so much to talk about. I'd love to go on and on and on, but it's time to go to bed. And just like recognize it for what it is. In the other scenario, when it's actual anxiety, then the best way, this is also from Dr. Chansky, what she recommends is using the time for your regular conversations. It's always healthy to have a small amount of time that's set in order to get out all of my fears. So if your child has 20 minutes of questions, give them 5 or 10 minutes earlier in the evening. Okay, what are all the things that you're worried about? Now, like you said, sometimes they may not come out, and you may have to give them just a few 5 minutes at that point, just to get some of their fears out. But after that, just to keep on going, letting them ask question after question is just going to raise their level of anxiety. It doesn't calm it down. When you're not, people who don't understand anxiety as well tend to think that the more we can reassure a person, then the calmer they'll be. But in most cases, when someone has anxiety, the reassurance will usually not help. Because as we said before, it's not a logical problem that they're dealing with. It's emotional. Right. So hear them out a little bit just to know that you understand that they're afraid. But after that, after a few minutes, then you can suggest to them, you can write it down. If you have any questions for me, at that point, they may not be so interested in doing that. Or that may be a good time to move on to some other relaxation techniques, besides for just your physical presence. But let's say some breathing skills or different distractions that you can give to the child, whether it's something to listen to or just get something to have for them to think about that's more calming for them, that might be useful.
And take their mind off. Oh, well, okay, great. These are fantastic, fantastic tips. I have one last question for you, and then I think we are going to finish this. And this is a one that I'm sure everybody questions themselves about time and time again. What do you feel about using, I'm not sure what word to use, incentives, bribes, different people like to call them different things. Basically, to offer your child either with a chart, or with an immediate incentive, you go to sleep now, tomorrow you're going to get something, or, you go to sleep for a week nicely, then we're going to get you a bigger prize or whatever it is. What do you feel about using a motivational incentive to help your child go to sleep, when they should?
Right. So, I'm definitely familiar with a lot of the back and forth regarding incentives. On the one hand, I do feel that you should use whatever works for you, but here are two points I would say. On the one hand, sometimes we get carried away with incentives and offer things, grandiose things that are just too big. And that just sets the bar so high that the next time you need to use an incentive, it's impossible to use. So like you said, small things can be useful. especially I would say, is that if you're having trouble with a child, and this may not be anxiety related, just getting them upstairs and getting ready, and getting the ball rolling. And the choice is either for you to get angry and upset and start yelling at your child, or using the sticker chart, and then you feel relaxed, then it's a win-win, I think, for both of you.
That's a solid point. That's a great, great point. Thank you so much. I really, really hope that this episode will help everyone get better sleep, because when the children sleep better, the parents sleep better, and it's a win for everyone. It's a win for the home. It's a win for the school. It's a win for the workplace. I mean, we are solving world problems with this episode. So thank you so much, Jacob Kibble, LCSW, for coming on today. And we will see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Parenting Not What You Thought podcast. I truly hope that this episode has been beneficial for you in your parenting. Please let me know either in the comments or by sending me an email at Baruch, that's B-O-R-U-C-H, at bmaparenting.com. Have a wonderful day.